Coming to you live from downtown Detroit, this is Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep with your host, Joel Elkanen.
This is a volatile puppy here, isn't it?
And Dennis Dick.
I've bitten a penny. I will buy the stock for a penny.
With everything you need to start your trading day. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to this Friday edition of Benzinga's Pre-Market Prep. Spencer Israel here with Dennis Dick. And continuing the theme of the past couple of days, a lot in the way of news and movers this morning, so we'll try to get to it all. We don't always get to everything, but we will try our best today. We have, let's see, ATVI just lost a big game. We're going to talk about that. The pot stocks are in the news. Aphria has an executive shakeup. Tilray got some investor confidence that their largest investor will not sell any of their shares for now. Ollie gave some guidance. Lennar had a big buyback. We have two upgrades this morning from Netflix. Some upgrades as well to Humana, Texas Roadhouse, downgrades to Yum, Starbucks, and PHM. And I'm sure there is more that I am missing. But those are the biggest headlines that I'm seeing this morning. S&P futures just sort of hanging out here at around 25.86 and a quarter. Dennis, I know you're a little behind, but aside from that, how was your overnight session?
Overnight session was fine. I'm definitely behind here this morning. I was up early, and then my kid fell back asleep. I fell back asleep, so I didn't get up till 7:40. On the second time around, which is like 25 minutes ago. So I'm trying to catch up on everything that I've missed. Easily scanners, you can look, but then you got to figure, okay, what's the news here? Okay, what's the driver over here? Just trying to figure it all because we've had some major movement here in some individual stocks. Tilray is what I'm looking at. This lighting up my filters. It's come off the highs. It was just over $100 about 10 minutes ago. Give us this headline from TLRY because this thing's up 19%. I'm seeing a lot of excited pot stock traders here this morning.
Yeah, right. Privateer Holdings, they are a PE firm. They own about 75 million shares of Tilray. And they have said they have no plans to register, sell, or distribute those shares when the lockup expires next week. So they're obviously an insider there. So that would mean they control the bulk of the float or the shares outstanding. And they have no intention of selling those shares on the open market. So that would mean an influx.
At least that's what they say. But they're going to have the ability to sell. Nathan Michaud, I'm just looking on Twitter, it's just a funny comment there. He says, question, what are their plans? Okay, so they said Privateer Holdings says it does not have any plans to register, sell, distribute 75 million shares, or always has when the lockup expires next week. That was the exact statement. So Nathan Michaud asks, question, what are their plans for the week after?
Yeah.
Are they going to sell? I mean, obviously that's going to put pressure if that is the case. But as of right now, just looking here, Tilray benefiting from these comments, been big time here. Got up over $100. It fell a little bit overdone, but we know, it's a tight float. I heard on the street that this borrow, which I haven't even been able to find a borrow. So if you can find a borrow, I heard it's as much as 900% a year. Oh. So it's really expensive to short this thing. If there is anybody short, and I'm not sure how big the short float is still, they're getting squeezed here this morning as it's up another 20%. So, and we've saw, short squeezes in the past here, and they can get really vicious. So I'm not coming in here shorting any stock, and I don't think I could probably find a locate even if I wanted to short the stock.
This one, I don't think we've talked about the other pot stocks. We have not talked Tilray, it seems like, in quite a while. Let's pull up a daily because I want to see where this stacks up compared to the crazy – what was it? Move we had was July, August. That was in August, I think, or September. But all right, we still got a ways to go till we get to 300.
Oh, yeah.
But we're never getting back there, probably. But an interesting move, especially when you consider how the pot stocks all tend to move together. And this morning, we're getting another headline from Aphria. They came out with earnings, and they also said that their co-founder and CEO are both transitioning out of their roles in the coming months, and they're working on a transition plan right now. Their earnings, I can give them to you. They're in, I have them in Canadian dollars, but their Q2 sales are $21 million versus $8 million Canadian dollars on a year-over-year basis, and their gross profit $10 million doubled on a year-over-year basis. So they had a good year as far as revenue is concerned, as we expected. But
Last I checked, Afria was getting hit on this news, but that was like an hour ago.
It's down. It's down. And this is a stock that hasn't participated as much in the recent pot stock rally. This has, you know, we've saw obviously Canopy Growth explode in the last 2 days. Afria is actually down in the last 2 days, just putting in perspective where our cannabis is up about 10% in the last 2 days. Afria is not. It has its own problems. We know this. There's a lot of allegations that were made by that short seller. So it's doing a kind of its own thing. You know, these used to all trade together, and they do in the absence of news, but just Afria has its own issues there. So it's sitting here, and the CEO, co-founder, is going to leave the company. I would think that, you know, with as much, you know, drama that's around it right now, that might actually be a good thing. The market is saying no, though, and the market's trading it down 4% here this morning. So I'm still out. I'm no position on Afria. I've traded a few times there. But with so much uncertainty and so many allegations out there, I think there's a better place for my money.
And it doesn't seem the Tilray news, it's pretty stock specific, so it doesn't seem like it's impacting Cronos or CGC or anything like that here this morning, as they're all just kind of hanging out.
Yeah, you know what? That's interesting too. You get an explosion in Tilray, and it's very company specific, you know, they say, but you get that explosion in Tilray. We did see CGC pop up just over 37 and a half, and it got up over on that news. So we did see a few of the pot stocks. MJ, the exception. MJ is trading higher. It obviously owns a bunch of Tilray in there. It's your ETF. So that's why it's trading up. But yeah, you're right. It's not really propelling the sector at all here this morning. I look at Aurora Cannabis is down 15 cents. Afria, we just talked about, is already down 4% on their own news. CGC did briefly go positive when the TLRY headline broke. It's now back to negative there. So, but CGC's had such a run, Spencer. I mean, this has been an incredible two-day move. Stock went from $28 to $38 in 2 days. So, you know, I'm getting a better move than that. So it maybe needs a little pause, a little breather. Where it goes from here, anybody's guess.
So just to put the Tilray headline in perspective here, so I guess, is the float 10 million shares and privateer owns 75 million shares? So they would just flood the zone if they were to sell anything.
Yeah, it's a tight float. So yeah, you know, maybe that's what we're looking at, or maybe it's closely tied. I don't follow the story close enough to really know. I'm just telling you that's the headline that's driving it. And you know, that's obviously if they're not going to sell, that's a good thing for the stock. But again, like Nathan Michaud tweeted, you know, how do you know they're going to have the ability to kind of turn around and sell? How do we know they're not going to do it, you know, 2 weeks from now or 3 weeks from now, even though they say they're not going to do it next week? Just because you say something too doesn't mean you're not necessarily going to do it.
That's a very good point. So, all right, let's move. We have 5 minutes before we're going to go to our first guest of the day. That's Nate Tobik from CompleteBankData.com, author of the Bank Investors Handbook. Let's go to ATVI. They're also getting a hit here this morning.
Oh, not good for Denny's portfolio, I tell you. I do own ATVI. I have a nice size position in it too. It was looking good. I was up. I was green in it again. Should have guessed I sold it. getting all bearish yesterday, should have sold that one too.
You should have. They announced a split with developer Bungie, who makes the Destiny game, one of their more popular properties, and they're no longer going to be receiving any revenue from the Destiny line of games anything that Bungie makes, including Destiny. That's what's hitting the stock here this morning.
And the stock is trading down to the tune of $3.80 now, down 7.5%. So it's a big headline, obviously company specific here. The only thing I would hope, you know, the 45 area, we had the triple bottom. I think that's good support. That's obviously $2 farther down than this, but you know, it's not good news here if they're, you know, potentially losing, you know, one of their game makers. And this, but then the split, Michael Pachter was saying, and I heard his comments on CNBC, that some of this wasn't completely unexpected. Or I don't know if it was Michael Pachter. Somebody was saying that this wasn't unexpected. So I'll take that back. I don't know if it was Michael Pachter that was saying that. But anyways, it was obviously unexpected to the market, because down 7.5% here this morning, and they started getting hit on it. And I actually almost got the beats on this in my day trading portfolio, because it started trading down. It actually caught a rating change at least, right before, and I had bought it because it actually had caught a rating change. Just a buy rating it had got from, what was it, Piper? Who I initiated?
Yep.
I'm trying to just find it here.
That was Stevens.
Stevens, yeah. Stevens initiated buy overnight. Bad timing. They literally initiated that right after 4 o'clock, and this news came out like 4:10. So I turned around, I saw this news, and I bought some stock at 51, I think, and maybe I bought some stock somewhere in there. I turned around and saw this news. I was like, that's a bad headline. I turned around and sold the stock in the higher 50s. So I took a quick 50 or 60 cent loser. Glad I did on the day trading. I've still got it on the investing side of the long-term account. So we'll see how that does overall. But short term here, obviously not good. But you're coming in a support area. If you get in the 45, 46 area, I think you find support. So I think if you're selling it now, I think you're kind of late.
ATVI. I'm trying to think of their major properties. They've got Call of Duty, they've got Candy Crush, they've got World of Warcraft, and they have Overwatch. And I don't know if there are any other big – that has to make up the majority of their revenue there. I don't know what else they've got going for them at this point. Maybe you do since they're in your portfolio. Or maybe
– no. It's in my portfolio because Michael Pachter likes it. Okay. And you know what? Yes, I've got my chartered financial analyst, but I don't sit here and crunch numbers. I'm not connected with these companies. I look at the charts. I look at, you know, valuation to a certain extent, but what's in the coming down the pipeline and stuff like that. You know, I own 100 companies that invest in portfolio. I can't follow that many companies.
Fair enough.
So maybe I own too many companies. Maybe I should start following better, but I'll tell you from my experience, most of the information immediately gets priced in anyways. So when Michael Pachter says he thinks it's double in 2 years, that makes me more confident to own it. But, you know, maybe this changes his mind. Be interesting to get Pachter on. We'll have to see. Maybe we can get him next week, see if that changes his mind up from his commentary on ATVI.
All right, fair enough. Almost 8:15 here. Let's take our first break of the day and grab Nate Tobik. He's the founder of CompleteBankData.com and the author of the Bank Investor's Handbook. A good time to talk to Nate with the banks reporting earnings next week. So we'll be back in a moment. And as promised, we are now live with Nate Tobik, CompleteBankData.com, author of the Bank Investor's Handbook. Nate, how's it going today?
Good. It's going well. Thanks for having me on, guys.
All right. Good time to talk to you, Nate. We've got earnings season on deck here. The banks are going to start us off next week. Citigroup is on Monday. I believe they'll all be done reporting by the time Wednesday is through. So give us a quick preview of this as far as what you're expecting for the banks this earnings season.
Yeah. So what I expect and I think what the market expects are two different things. If you look at the KBW Bank Stock Index, it's down much more than the market, especially November, December. I mean, it was just totally hammered and it hasn't really bounced back all that much. So, the narrative right now is these banks, we're in some sort of a recession, business is dead, no one is borrowing. And earnings are going to be down like crazy, so the market's forward thinking and it's looking at the rates going up and it's thinking, what's going to happen in the future. But Q4 is already in the books and, we already know what rates were and business was fine in Q4. And so I think what's going to happen is a lot of these banks are going to report earnings that are better than expected or in line. And we're going to see a boost in a lot of these stocks. So some of these banks, they've sold down like crazy. And, the bank stock index it's like a 3.5% dividend yield right now. I mean, that's unusual, right? Especially in, kind of the last 10 years we've had. You could find bank stocks that have almost a 5% dividend yield. And they're trading below book. So everyone thinks the economy's dead and we're in this recession, but when you're on the ground, it definitely doesn't seem like that. And, coupled with that, even as rates go up, banks that have a good deposit franchise are going to be perfectly fine. So, some of the big banks like Bank of America, Citi, Wells Fargo, they trade kind of in line with the economic sentiment of the country, right? So if everyone thinks we're going into a recession, those are going down. If we have a good news report, those bounce right back immediately. Where you could start to find value is kind of the next tier down. So that's it's like regional banks, and they're still giant banks. They still have all of the same nationwide exposure, but the trading is a little bit more muted, and they get sold off just like everyone else, and they just don't quite bounce back as much. And I think that's really where some of the opportunity lies.
All right, before we drill down on that level, so looking at just the largest banks, and does the recent dovish comments as far as interest rate policy, does that change things at all for you?
So, you know, like, let's talk interest rates for a minute here. So let's say, you know, as interest rates rise, the banks who are going to be killed are the ones who went way out on the curve a year or two ago because they said rates are never going to go up and we need yield because we're just suffering. So those are the people who they lent money that is going to mature in 3 years, 5 years, 15 years. And now they're locked into that. You know, they've basically locked that in, and now their costs are going up and they're going to have trouble paying that. So you're going to see a lot of net interest margin compression. And where you see the most compression, I think, is just the biggest, you know, it's like that bank is waving a flag saying, we really don't know how to conduct our business. So everyone who isn't experiencing it to the extreme, they kept their books short. And about a year ago, it was almost 80% of banks in the U.S., their loans, the average maturity was a year or less for their entire loan book. So people are keeping it short. And because of that, they're going to continue to roll it. So, you know, we're kind of in this weird thing now where mortgage rates went up and then they slid down again. Deposit rates are going up. So that's going to be an issue going forward. But commercial banks or banks that do a lot of commercial lending, their rates are rising with the market because they're priced to the market. And really, you want to be invested in bank stocks that have a good commercial lending program. And that's because those borrowers are going to have, they're going to be required to keep money on deposit with almost no interest paid on that money. And they're going to be lending that money back out at LIBOR plus, you know, whatever the premium is for the loan. So those commercial loans sort of float. Where you don't want to be caught is you don't want to be caught in the commercial loans when someone's building a strip mall at the edge of the city in a speculative area. So you want to be more tried and true. And, you know, like I said, that's some of the regional banks. You're going to see they're a little bit more cautious and they're going to be doing more inventory financing. They're going to be doing CapEx upgrades. And it's not the speculative stuff. Where you get caught with the speculative stuff is a smaller bank that says, hey, we've been in this awesome bull market. All we've done is mortgages for the last 50 years. I think we need to do some commercial lending. And, you know, someone's cousin's brother-in-law comes and says, hey, I've got this project we should check out. And, you know, that's the top.
All right. So let's drill down now. You mentioned the KBW. I've got the KRE regional bank ETF up on the screen here. What are some names you like as far as regional banks?
Yeah. So I really like FNB. So ticker is just FNB. And right now you get a 4.5% dividend yield. It's 78% of book value. They have a really nice mix of lending. So there's good chunk of residential lending, got some construction, some commercial. Pretty much it's everything. It's well-rounded. They are in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and North Carolina. And credit quality is still excellent. And, you know, that's kind of the other thing that's going on is, while everyone's worried about the economy, credit quality is still great at these banks. And we haven't really seen any deterioration. And that really drives significant losses, especially in downturns. So if banks are prudent, I think a lot of them still kind of feel the sting of 2008, 2009. And because of that, there's some banks that made the crazy loans, right? And they're out there. We could talk about that in a minute. But for the most part, credit quality is great. So you got a bank like FNB. It's a discount to book value, which is unheard of over the last couple of years. It's got a really nice dividend yield. Another one is Citizens Financial, CFG. I mean, these guys have a price to earnings of 8.3, price to book 75%. Again, a 3.3% dividend yield. You know, these are the sort of stocks where those are great values, and you could fill a portfolio with a couple names like that. In terms of trading, what I would say is it's almost good enough just to trade some of these ETFs around earnings, because I think the narrative is so negative, and I think we're going to see a bounce that you could just be hanging out in the you know, KBWR or I don't know what the KBW. Do you have it pulled up? The main KBW index.
The KRE K
KBWB okay. is the other ETF. You know, so these things are heavily weighted towards the top banks, and if they have good earnings and it's better than expected, that's what's going to shoot up, and you could just trade that. I don't necessarily expect any enormous moves. You were talking earlier about a Tilray. I don't think anyone should expect something like that.
Yeah, I don't think anyone.
But you know, when the narrative is a little different than expected, and earnings come out a little better than expected, I think there's going to be some good moves. Now, in terms of aggressive lenders, I think the last time I was on, we were talking about Bank of Ozarks, and either that day or pretty quickly after, it dropped 20%. I'm still bearish on them. They've been extremely aggressive, and credit quality is showing some cracks. Another bank that's similar is HOMB, that's Home Bank Shares, and they are just as aggressive. They're out, you know, they're lending outside of their home markets. They're doing the speculative projects. So you say, okay, you know, when things do finally start to crack, who do we have to worry about? Those are the sort of banks. You know, so if you want to put on a trade and, you know, buy some puts on those guys and go long some of the regional banks, I think that's going to be a really good spread.
When you say you like these names, you like Citizens Financial, you like them as a swing trade, as an investment, as what?
So, yeah, I like them as an investment. I was in CFG for a while. I actually recommended it on your show around 24, 25. It's at 32 now. In the meantime, the fundamentals have gotten better with the bank, and I think it's at a better position than it originally was. You know, so I would say these regional banks are worth at least book value. You're trading at 75% of book. So, you know, that's a medium-term trade, potentially longer. Plus, you get the dividend while you're waiting. So, you know, you could be looking at a 25-30% upside plus that dividend over a couple quarters. It's a pretty good medium-term trade.
All right, again, some people in the chat asking if you have any views on SunTrust.
You know, I haven't looked into SunTrust recently. I should do that.
Okay, so no, there yeah. we go. Question no, no, asked and answered there. Now they come with me with the symbols. What about NYCB? Do you follow community banks at all?
I do. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, NYCB is a good bank. You know, so they had the busted merger with Astoria Financial. And I think in the wake of that, both those guys are trying to figure out what they want to do next. And I think that's a good bank to be in. It's a good market. And yeah.
What about any implications from the banks as far as Europe? Is weak, as we've seen. We've talked about that at ad nauseum on our show. The European banks here. Do you see that making its way over to these banks in some way, shape, or form?
Yeah, I mean, so it'll definitely hit the bigger banks first because you know, JP Morgan, Citigroup, they have operations over in Europe. FNB, they don't have anything going on in Europe, and so. Once you step down from the biggest banks, the only effect you're going to have is, you know, if there's a European business slowdown and it affects supply or regional businesses and they start to feel the pain, then those regional banks are going to feel it. At the top level, you know, I think in some ways a European crisis could be a buying opportunity for the banks that are sheltered from it. So, you know, the rumors floating around Deutsche Bank, they've got a bunch of issues. And no one really knows if they're going to last or not. You know, if let's say something does happen to them, the biggest banks are going to drop like a rock. And you know, maybe there's skeletons hiding in the closet with those guys over in Europe. There's really no way to know.
Right.
And you know, I don't even know if the CEOs of these guys of the big banks even know. You know, the organizations are so big, you just can't really know what skeletons are in your own company. So. I would say, you know, for my money, it's those bigger regionals where I think it's the safest play right now. It's the best value. The bigger banks are also valued around book value. So there's a little bit of a discount if you step down the chain.
And then last one, and I'll let you run, but KeyCorp or KeyBank, you have thoughts there?
Yeah, so they're a decent bank. I would say the value is better in the names that I named versus Key. I don't have a strong opinion either way towards them, but I would say they aren't as good of a value as FNB or Citizens.
All right.
Some of the, yeah.
Now one more, PNC, and then I'll let you run.
Yeah, I like PNC. Look, I'm in Pittsburgh where PNC is. So, they're obviously the heavyweight here. And, they're a good lender. They've got their fingers at everything. Their risk group seems to be pretty good. I know, just based on some local knowledge, they've had some loans, commercial loans that were kind of teetering, and they've been able to pawn those off before they ever hit their balance sheet. So, they've been able to do some dancing and keep things going well. So I would say, going forward, that's probably going to be the same sort of thing. So I think PNC is a good bank as well.
I didn't realize you're in Pittsburgh. Does the sun ever come out?
It's gray, but there's hope in April.
Oh, okay. There's hope. There's hope in 3 months that you might see the sun. Well, maybe we'll talk to you before then. Nate Tobik is the founder of CompleteBankData.com. He's the author of the Bank Investor's Handbook. Nate, as always, thanks for coming on, and we'll be in touch.
All right. Thanks for having me. Have a great morning, guys. Yep.
All right. Dennis, are you alive in the trade cave right now?
Oh, yeah.
You're
yeah, actually, dead. It's okay. Pretty quiet here, really. I mean, we're just kind of consolidating here. We're down 10 points. It's a little pullback. This market is just funny. I mean, it's hard to really figure, because yesterday you had a lot of reasons to sell off and they buy it back again. So buy the dip mentality is still in. There's a lot of people that believe that the low is in and they've got to buy every dip because we're going back to all-time highs. I'm not of that belief. I told you the 260 is my key level. And, really the last couple of days is we're, 258, 259. We're flirting up there with the SPY, but we're not quite to it yet. I'm just saying the market's still guilty until proven innocent. I want to see 262, 263, and, showing bids across the board, not getting more bad news. It's going to be earnings season. That's going to be what dictates really what the next move is, because obviously, if earnings really work out here, and they're good and the banks are going to get, we're going to start getting the banks next week. I mean, it's going to really kickstart, Monday, Tuesday. It's a big week. That's really what's going to dictate what's going forward. We've had a couple warnings ahead of time, obviously from Apple. Macy's holiday sales were terrible. We know we had the retail massacre yesterday. But, that being said, Kohl's bounced back nicely. Macy's did not, but Kohl's came off the lows from yesterday. Had a couple of the other ones that, did bounce a little bit. Nordstrom was another one that bounced a little bit from the lows as well. So the buy the dip mentality is still in there. It's going to be it's going to be about fundies, though, and it's going to be about earnings. And if the earnings can really be strong, maybe, expectations are low enough that can drive us and take us up to the next level. But we don't know yet.
And speaking of earnings season, so we have the banks. We also have next week Netflix, which is why I'm interested in the pair of ratings of upgrades.
Wow.
They got this morning. Yeah. Well, they got last night. They got UBS upgraded them to buy. Also, Raymond James upgraded them from outperform to strong buy. So a pair of upgrades on Netflix. Just under a week ahead of earnings.
Yeah, just incredible. It's up 100 points. Netflix is up 100 points since the lows. And that was back on December 26th when we hit 231. Right now we're 331. So we're up 100 points in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 trading, 12 trading sessions if you include today. We're up 100 points on Netflix in 12 trading sessions. The stock is up 45%. In 12 trading sessions. So if you think you're buying it cheap now, you're not. You're buying it back at the highs that it was back in November. So if you're buying it now, you're saying it's going all-time highs. And maybe you're right. This stock, I cannot believe the strength. I would have never thought it could have this kind of strength. So obviously I've been wrong. I thought it would have stalled out at 300. It didn't even pause at 300, blew through it the next day. So upgrades driving it. But these analysts that are upgrading it now, where were you 12 days ago? I mean, it's up 45% 12 days, and now you're telling me to buy it? Late to the party.
And it's not like anything has changed fundamentally in the last two
weeks.
Yeah,
but you're supposed to be fundamental guys. Why aren't you buying the thing when it's going down? Why do you want to buy it when it's up 40% in 12 days? 12 days, Spencer. this is a widely traded stock. This isn't a small little penny stock. This is an incredible move this has had. You're buying it now. Holy cow. Yeah, maybe it continues. I mean, the trend is your friend now. It's broken out and it's gone. But I mean, there is going to be a down day in here somewhere as well, where, you know, people are that it just booked profits. There's people that bought this at 240, 250, 260 that are sitting on 30% gains in a week and a half. I mean, that's the market, and that's a lot of, you know, cases right now. That's why I've argued, and I've been wrong so far arguing in the last couple of days, is I think it's going to fizzle out eventually. It hasn't. We haven't really went up that much, but we haven't fizzled yet either, and it was good for the market, very good for the market. That ended up going green yesterday on a very bad news day. So, you know, the market is trying, but, you know, this Netflix up 100 points already, I mean, it just seems overbought to me.
Maybe... I don't know, man. Maybe someone knows something. Maybe they know the
nobody knows anything. Well, all these guys just chase price. There's a lot of these analysts, Spencer.
Maybe
that
they,
we talk. We have a strategy built around an analyst chase price. They see it going up and they're like, I better upgrade now. They should not be watching the price action as much as they are. I mean, they have to look at price because it's included in their stuff. But I mean, I think it's sometimes just, you know, the thing gets rolling, it gets going, they see their friends upgrade, they're like, I better upgrade it too here now. That's why you see sometimes when 3, 4, 5 upgrades come in a matter of a week or two, because the first guy rocks the boat and they're like, oh, I was thinking about upgrading. I better upgrade it now too. And, you know, somebody else has seen the same thing I am.
Okay.
So anyways, it's a little rant here, but I just think like UBS, thanks a lot. You know, it's 100 points higher. Now you're telling me to buy it. I think the people who are buying here lose money.
All right. I'm just saying maybe they did do some channel checks or whatever it is that they do to do their research. And they
do those channel checks 12. Everything changed in 12 days.
I don't know.
The thing's 240. Could have been a hero upgrading it then. You'd look like a genius. Now you just look like you're chasing price. So I don't know. Like maybe it's going back to all time highs. But man, if you were long this thing, it just rallied 100 points. If you were long this thing, getting killed. Let's say you bought like 330 or 320, and you just watched the thing fall in a month and a half, 100 points, and you're like, oh. It came all the way back. You got your money back. I mean, there's going to be some people that want to get their money back here. This thing's going to stall out eventually, whether it's a 330 or 340 or 350. I don't think it's getting back to all-time highs anytime soon. So, and, you know, like, I don't think you're getting another 100 points in the next 12 days. So I think the easy money has been made on the Netflix side. I'm looking for a red candle. I get a nice red candle here because it's been straight up. Then you get the check back maybe to retest the high and you get short. I'm not going to short the rocket ship. I'm not going to say come here and short 331 here, even though I think you make money if you do it. But, you know, you wait for the red candle on the daily thing, maybe drops 20 points in one day, 25 points, going to do that one of these days. In the next couple of days, I think Netflix has like a 20 or 25 point down day because it's just overbought. Same reason I call the 1,000 point rally in the Dow. This is the exact opposite for Netflix. It's just overbought here now. It's going to have a washout here. That's the red candle. So that's then the signal when it comes back up and maybe retests or gets close to that high, then you get short. Right now you're shorting a rocket ship, so it's hard to short a stock going straight up because you could have said 300, you could have said 320, and you've been out underwater. So I'm going to wait for the red candle before I get short, but I'm not buying it up here.
Better yet, wait till Thursday. Thursday afternoon we'll know for sure, or at least for now. Yes, next Thursday.
On Thursday?
Next Thursday.
I thought they were later in the season. Oh, well, there you go. So a lot of high expectations are going to be into that one too here because up 100 points. But, you know, again, so technicals take a backseat to fundamentals. We're going to get so much fundamental data coming because earnings season is kicking off. That's really going to be the driver on whether we're going to go and take out the 260 on this buy and eventually go back to all-time highs or whether this rally is going to fizzle out. It's all going to depend on earnings, and it's all going to depend on the sentiment towards those earnings. Right now, the earnings expectations are somewhat low for some companies here because some haven't really, you know, picked it up and got out of the gutter yet. I mean, some have, but there's a lot of stocks still hanging out at the lows. I mean, and maybe this is a good segue into another rating here this morning. Look at Weight Watchers here. This thing cannot rally.
Can we?
I mean, we just had a rip your face off rally on the S&P here, 1,000 points back on the 26th. We've had, you know, we're basically up 2,000 Dow points here in 2 weeks. And Weight Watchers
Dennis, I want to bring on our next guest. So let's talk about all this with Sean Emery. He is the
bring him on.
Yeah, founder and CIO of Averine Company. We'll talk Netflix. We'll talk Weight Watchers. We'll see what his thoughts on that. We'll be back in a moment with Sean Emery. All All right, and as promised, here is Sean Emery, the founder and CIO of Avery and Company. Sean, how's it going?
Going well. Happy Friday, everybody.
Happy Friday to you, Sean. We were just talking a little bit about Netflix. Dennis is a little annoyed at these analysts for not upgrading the stock 2 weeks ago when it was 240. Now it's 320, and he wants them to, I don't know, not upgrade it. I'm not really sure what Dennis wants.
So now, all my argument was, Sean, and I'll just, you know, is here you got two upgrades. You got UBS upgrading it last night, put a 450 place target on it. But, you know, here you, it's up 100 points in the last 11 trading sessions. And now you're upgrading it? I mean, where were you a week and a half ago? I mean, it's so late to the party. Like, is the next 100 points going to be as easy as the last 100 points? I highly doubt it. So, I mean, the thing is completely overbought here now. And, you know, maybe it's going back to all-time highs here next week. What are your thoughts here? Is this analyst not late to the party?
Yeah, I mean, look, this is it's the same story, I think, for every company, every analyst at the same time. When things go up, you see some of the upgrades. When things goes down, you see the downgrades pile
right.
in.
Jason Christ.
Yeah, they tend to be short-sighted, and psychology is obviously a powerful force. But obviously, Netflix on a standalone basis, again, it's a story you got to look more than 12 months out, which is typically what analysts do. You have to look at this story 3, 4, 5, 10 years out, and kind of think, what's the realm of possibilities for this firm? It's not cheap at just basic valuations on a trailing 12, but honestly, you can't look at a trailing 12 or even a forward 12 if you're going into Netflix. That bounce you're talking about, yeah, it's huge. It came straight off of kind of a trend line that was dating back multiple years. And Netflix is hitting on all cylinders. We saw what they did with their recent movie. You look at any sort of Google Trend or App Store rankings, and again, you're seeing acceleration and engagement. And that's exactly what you want to see if you're an investor in Netflix.
So Fundies, you sound like you kind of like it still. Would you be a buyer here at 320 after the 100-point rally? Maybe it just keeps going. You know, I don't know. Nobody's got a crystal ball here. What are your thoughts here at $330 this morning when it was 230 a week and a half ago?
Yeah, I mean, look, if you're talking the very, very short term, it's clearly overbought. So I wouldn't be piling in if you were trying to take that position. Look, I've never been a big believer solely because of their piling up of obligation. So that's kept me on the sidelines for Netflix for quite a long time. And it's the financial story that's kept me off the side or on the sidelines for it. The next 100 points, I could see us retesting those June 2016 lows, which is kind of where a trend starts to form. Not testing that, but testing the trend line, which again goes back to essentially where we were, maybe like 280, 285 before it heads higher again. Again, I don't think the story's slowing down anytime soon, but I think investors are going to get another shot at some point.
All right, Sean, we've been talking a little bit on today's show about upcoming earnings season starts next week. Is there anything you're especially looking forward to in the next 4 to 6 weeks with these earnings as they come in?
Yeah, to get them out of the way. that's probably everyone wants to know what's going on within these companies. Obviously, we got a string of guidance from whether it's Apple or some others. There's real concerns out there. I mean, not just looking at markets, but I mean, if you look at FedEx and look at Apple and you hear some of the retailers and they speak about kind of the negativity that they're seeing, whether it's on a forward basis or a current basis. I mean, that has to spook some people internally. One of the big factors, I guess, we've seen, again, if you have this multinational story for most of these companies where the S&P or most of the indices now have foreign revenues, we just think it's important to look, obviously, at the dollar. And over the last year, since the dollar's come down now, we're about flat from a year ago. So dollar headwind isn't as much of a headwind, I guess, for this upcoming earnings report or this earnings season. But over the last 5 years, again, it's been a headwind of roughly like 20%. So what we're looking for in this earnings report is, or this earnings season is essentially kind of a reset of expectations, ensure that a lot of these companies aren't kind of re-guiding down because some of them are already pre-announced. So that's kind of what we're looking at. Obviously, the big bellwethers, the Amazons of the world, the Apples of the world, despite we already know kind of what Apple's going to report. And again, that's what we're really focused on, is trying to get kind of those multinational players, get some reads on them, and then kind of full circle as tax cuts come off and so on. I think we'll get a cleaner picture this year of what's really happening outside of kind of any fiscal stimulus that's taking place, a neutral dollar year over year. So again, this is a good quarter to kind of reset expectations and see what's really happening without any external factors.
Do you expect a lot of CEOs to come out on their calls and blame the, for one thing or another, to blame the trade war or mention the trade war and blame that for anything?
Yeah. I mean, it's shifting weather to a trade war. I mean, every CEO tends to blame weather when things are bad for whatever reason. Because it's easy and no one can really go ahead and calculate that. Tariffs and trade war, I think, is semi-similar. You don't know exactly kind of who or what is essentially being affected, because the buyer of your product could be holding up because they're overseeing what they're doing. So, I 100% I feel tariffs is going to be the leading excuse this go around. And again, every quarter, it's whatever the trailing 6 month problem was is kind of what the buzzword of the forward earnings reports are.
Do you follow the Constellation story at all? ST Zebra, because this obviously is interesting, got slammed. And then on Mad Money, the CEO disclosed with his brother that he'd acquired 1 million shares. And that's what's really popped the stock up the last couple of days. We know when we dug under the hood, that was actually just an option exercise. So it wasn't like you went in the open market and bought 1 million shares. But regardless here, exposure to big stock, putting the money where their mouth is, it's popped back here. Had a nice day yesterday on not a great tape. Are you following the Constellation story?
You know, not at the kind of detail level. Obviously, it hits our screener after the plunge.
Your screeners. Are you one of those guys that, you know, you get the plunge on something, you think, okay, well, something's cheap that I've been eyeing here now, and I'm going to dive in? Or are you more of a momentum guy where you see a plunge and you think it's for a reason, maybe the plunge is going to continue? Talk about some of your strategy.
Yeah. So both facets, right? I mean, some of our stories happen to be momentum stories because, again, the operations are kind of driving forward. Some of them are kind of these transition stories. This is kind of more of a one-off, right? I mean, you had a certain situation that led to the plunge as opposed to kind of a whole transition of the business. But again, so some of our screeners are looking for pretty high quality stuff. We have another screener that's literally looking for kind of 52-week low type of companies, but again, there's some fundamental detail that kind of weeds out and ranks our companies by quality. And again, one of those characteristics is growth. So sometimes momentum does help push some of these companies to the top of our screeners. Again, we have like 4, 5, 6 screeners. They all have different purpose, but they all have a purpose. And one of those, again, is trying to find companies that are depressed. And maybe we're trying to find that transition story that truly turns around. I mean, a good example of that for us last year was kind of Chipotle. And again, you saw that stock goes plummet down over like a 3-year period, and it eventually hit our screener. We did the work and kind of pulled the trigger on that transition story.
What a rally in this one.
Kind of thing.
What a rally in this one. I hadn't looked at the chart. I don't follow Chipotle, and that's $500 stock. I don't day trade it that much just because the spreads are too wide. But holy cow, this thing was 380 on the 26th, 509. So, you know, we're talking about the Netflix rally. Here's a 130-point rally, not maybe as much on percentage basis as Netflix, but pretty darn close. So what's your story in CMG now after this 130-point rally in 12 days?
Yeah, it's a transition story. I mean, Brian Nichol, the CEO, he's done a fabulous job I don't know if you guys are as familiar with him, but he came from Taco Bell.
Right. So yeah, I remember that.
He came in and he's done some work, and everything from building out their online business, digital business, where like 15% of sales now come from kind of the app or their web platform. So, I mean, that's huge for restaurant retail. It's kind of like that Starbucks, what happened to Starbucks several years back. And you start to build a loyalty program after, off of a digital community. So that's part of the story for us. Obviously now valuations are starting to push to the point where not only was it cheap and there's a transition and kind of that inflection point, which I think is why we saw the sharp rally over the last year. Because it was a refresh of what their plan is. A CEO comes in with execution history. He begins to execute, so that pushes it even higher, all within 12 months. Now comes to the point where they actually have to execute to really see any sort of serious kind of valuation enhancement as investors. So I think the next, like, let's say 100 points where we think it could hit is going to be much harder than the last 100 points, clearly. And it's going to be more of a slower grind up, assuming they don't have any execution flaws within that process. But again, it's an execution story now. And before it was just, we think, a forgotten story. So that's where Chipotle is. I mean, we're looking at it day by day. We're looking at some of their app store rankings literally by the day to see kind of how their marketing, their different marketing tactics are enhancing their digital presence. So that's Chipotle, really.
And before I let you go, Sean, any other names that are high on your watch list right now?
Yeah, we've been semi-vocal on it. I mean, the whole gaming community has been smashed. I know you've probably seen it. I mean, everything from Activision, Take-Two to Electronic Arts. So again, those are pretty high levels, and we were big advocates of those. And specifically recently, it's been an interesting story for us to be looking in that direction. Specifically Electronic Arts, we like them the best. One, they have kind of their licensed business, which is extremely interesting. The FIFAs of the world, the Maddens of the world, very, very stable, as long as they don't lose those contracts. We also think, I don't know if you saw, so we had predictions for 2019, and one of those was kind of acquisition spree within gaming. These companies are flush with cash, but also so are the potential acquirers of them. Think the big people and the big companies out there that would possibly delve into kind of owning content within gaming, they're flush with cash as well. And so we think it's shaping up to be a pretty nice story here over the next 12, 18, 24 months for these companies. And again, Electronic Arts is the one that we probably like the best. And from a technical perspective, they're showing pretty strong relative strength. I mean, they've been showing relative strength for, I don't know, the last month or so, which, again, if you're in an investment environment where you don't know the direction of kind of where everything's going, at least try to find some sort of relative strength with a company with pretty good valuation and fundamentals. I think that's a good place to kind of start.
So then do you have any thoughts on the news from ATVI this morning that they parted ways there with Bungie and they're losing the Destiny game?
Yeah, I did see that. So, yeah, that came out last night, which is really interesting. Still trying to dig through what exactly it means for everybody, right? The whole, how does that spread or that philosophy spread to the others? And kind of what's the tell there? I think that's important, right? What's the tell? What are they doing specifically? All I know is, so Square just plucked the CFO from Blizzard. Mm-hmm. There was a couple other executives leave from Activision Blizzard. I don't know if it's an Activision Blizzard story that's kind of melting in front of us, or is it something that they're doing specific? And again, whenever you see these executives leave, it makes you question what's going on there. And then you have these big transitions like this. So again, I think we have to look deeper into Activision. Again, we don't own Activision, but it's something that I don't know. There might be something underneath the hood that is somewhat concerning, specifically if anyone out there is an investor.
All right. We've been on with Sean Emery. Avery & Company is the name of his firm. Sean, thanks for the time, and have a good weekend.
Same, guys. Same. Right. Have a good weekend, and thanks for having me on.
Thanks, Sean.
All right, Dennis.
Bye, guys.
SPY, we're at down at 258, so we're down an awful little from the highs of the overnight session here. What else? Let's look at what else.
Well, Citigroup is bucking the trend here. If you bring up Citi this morning, yeah, it is a headline that broke at 8:30. Citi, yeah, and Value Act Capital enter into an information sharing and engagement agreement. I obviously haven't had time to dive into that because I'm trading and doing a radio show, but Value Act, you know, we know activist investor, they may be looking to shake things up a little bit here. We know they were already in it. We knew they were invested in Citi, but now it looks like they're going to get more active with this position. And that's usually a thing that drives the stock price higher, at least in the short term. So we're seeing Citigroup pop 1% despite the market obviously being down.
And they might get a board seat as well. Value Act,
yeah, they said they're not seeking a board seat at this time, but they have discussed the potential for a board seat. So whatever the hell that means. But anyways, you get Value Act, Citi, Value Act, you know, piping up, that we know that, you know, will prop the stock up, at least in the short term. So that's why Citi is trading up this morning.
Right. All right. Let's talk about Lennar. They announced last night a rather large buyback. They announced a billion-dollar buyback last night.
Big time. Wow, we're just falling out of bed here right now a little bit. Big time buyback here for Lennar. I'm long the stock, so I actually bought it last night on the announcement of the buyback. So maybe I'll just hold my comments there. I'm probably going to sell here this morning. No, just bought it because usually these things get a pop when they announce a buyback.
I have been looking all morning for news on Autohome, ATHM, and I don't have not seen any. It's down 11%, and I don't know why. If anyone in the chat wants to enlighten me as to why this stock is...
What's the simple on auto? I don't follow the story at all. ATHM?
ATHM. If any of you want to enlighten us why this stock is down, please do so, because it's kind of driving me mad this morning. So that was one on my list.
Actually, I don't know why.
I don't know why it's down. Looking for any and all ideas on that. I also had Ollie's bargain outlet on my list to discuss. They came out with a guidance raise this morning at 7:30. They raised their fiscal year sales by a smidge. $1.245 billion is their new fiscal year sales guidance. Their fiscal year comps are going to be up 4%. Their adjusted EPS was raised by 4 cents. Going to be at $1.81. Ollie, OLLI, is trading up on that news.
I just quickly looked the same thing for our news on ATHM. I don't see it either here. Yeah, so, if you got it, tweet it at us or enlighten us here, because I'm in the same boat as Spencer Israel. I don't see anything jumping out at me. I do not follow the story closely, though. So, obviously, I didn't even know the ticker symbol off my hair. Usually, I know them all. So, it tells you how many times I trade this thing.
JV Spec says Credit Suisse is going to hold a conference with that they're going to be at, but that wouldn't be enough to I don't know.
I mean, it's an ADR, so it's trading active over. I don't know if there was a spinoff. Maybe there's a spinoff or something we're missing, because not too many people are excited about this morning. Like, it's not hitting much of major issues. So, but I do see it down 11%. So right. I'm not sure either.
Let's look at Ollie real fast. OLLI, guidance raise this morning.
Stock trading up $3 here in the pre-market. It's a nice lift. Technically, the stock has been on fire for the last 2 weeks, just like everything else in the last 2 weeks. Bottom back on the 24th, 59.72. It's now up at 80, getting back almost all the losses from December. You still got, I guess, 10 points to go, but it's on the way to getting back some of those losses. You're going to get into a gap area. If it can get up over the high at 80.64, that'll be the first test. Then there's a gap up to $85. So you do have some room, I would say, to that 85. If you get over 80.64, the first test is going to be 80.64.
All right, looking at ratings here, we mentioned the Netflix upgrades. Goldman Sachs making a call this morning. They are upgrading Texas Roadhouse to buy, and they are downgrading Starbucks and Yum Brands. Yum Brands down to sell, Starbucks down to neutral. TXRH called the upgrade.
Let's go Starbucks. Down 3% here. I have not been a fan of this. It keeps coming back. I mean, I haven't been a fan for a long time. So I'm probably not going to say anything positive about it because I just don't believe in the story here going forward. I think, you know, it's a valuation, you know, it may be okay. It's got a little dividend there, but I don't know where the growth is coming from. So SBUX, I'm just not a big fan of stocks, the story. From a technical perspective, you ran all kinds of resistance up in the lower, in the higher 64s. Now you come back, you're probably going to retest that low, I would think, of 60.42. What it does that, can it hold? You know, that would be the question, but I don't like the story.
Other notable rating changes, we have Humana catching an upgrade this morning from Cowen and Company to outperform. Bank of America upgrading State Street to buy. We had, as far, those are the most notable upgrades I saw as far as downgrades are concerned. Barclays downgrading Gap to underweight. Bank of America downgrading Dominion Energy to underperform. Downgrading CME to neutral. Weight Watchers, you mentioned earlier, Dennis, they're downgraded JP Morgan to neutral. And those are
quickly talk Weight Watchers. Incredible, you know, fall back in the summer. This was over $100. It got ridiculous. You know, that was just it. You know, and Spinner saying, yeah, it came from $10 and it did. I mean, it just got ridiculously overdone. You know, and I don't think we've been a fan. I was probably not a fan all the way up, so I was wrong all the way up. I've been right all the way down, but you know, I wasn't one I was closely following either here. $33. It's just interesting, like what I was mentioning before Sean came on, is just it can't catch a rally. So, you know, when it's not rallying and the whole market's rallying, it's telling you you're really in a dog. So maybe it's going to play a catch-up trade eventually. Maybe it's going to have a lift here eventually, but it doesn't look like this morning because it's down another 5%. And what I'll say is, you know, if you're looking at this and you think it's cheap, you know, maybe it is, but wait till it stops going down. I mean, the trend is absolutely not your friend. It could not rally when everything rallied in the last 2 weeks. It's telling me there's more problems here for Weight Watchers. At least the market thinks that.
All right, before we dip out for the week, Dennis, any imbalances to note?
355,000 to buy in GE. That is interesting because General Electric is trading down here in the pre-market, and we often see the sell imbalances. So I don't know. That's interesting. Bank America, 132,000 to sell. Ford, 486,000 to sell. That's interesting because Ford is actually trading up. So Ford's active right now. Ford just come out news. Ford's trading active.
GM, hold on. I'm hearing three things at once. GM just said Cadillac will be the company's lead electric vehicle brand. I'm trying to listen to Brent talk to me. And what is it?
Big news.
Oh, guidance. Is also. Let me find here.
GM is guidance.
GM guidance, fiscal year adjusted EPS, free cash flow to exceed the previously provided guidance. So cars are all up.
Guidance raised for GM. That's going to help Ford. That's probably going to help all the automotives here. FCAU popping big time here right now as well. If we're looking at you know, the big three here, they're getting a good lift. This just broke 857 here. Yep. So they're looking 650 to $7. Analyst estimates for 592. Man, they make a lot of money. You know, the one thing, and we've said this for a long time, is, you know, they've made a lot of money for a while here, and GM says they're going to continue to make money here. So that the guidance raise is really propping GM up here. That's a big pop for GM. Ford, obviously popping in sympathy here this morning, is now trading up 1.5% as well. But let's go look at the technicals on GM, see where this thing is potentially going. I mean, it's through the 36 resistance. I would have said that would have been resistance first. And then he kind of opened up. I mean, there was all these tops up here. The very high of the whole move is 39.61. That's a long ways away. So I don't think that's going to come into play today here. But guidance raise, this is good news for the overall market. And it's also good news for the automotive sector, which has just been in the gutters. So if I was short these stocks, I'd be probably scrambling for cover here, at least on the Ford. But, you know, I still have the story going forward. I sold my long-term Ford position. I'm still not a huge believer in the long-term story here. But I'll tell you, GM, this is a nice pop for them. It's nice guidance.
A lot of news next week to be coming here as well, because we have the Detroit Auto Show starting Sunday or Monday. So expect some more headlines from the automakers. But on that note, we're going to wrap it up for our shows for this week. Thanks to everyone who joined us today, both on YouTube and premarket.benzinga.com. Thanks to our guests, Nate Tobik and Sean Emery. Please remember, all the information from our show is for informational purposes only and not meant to be investing advice. You can catch our podcast, iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, and Google Play if you missed any part of our show. With that said, everyone, have a good weekend, and hope you join us again on Monday.